Welcome along, everyone, to show 119. I'm in the chair this week, and we are doing our review of this season's monuments, first four of the classic monuments. So strap yourself in for what is going to be a whistle-stop tour of the classics. We started what feels like more than a month ago now, but it is about a month-ish, back in Italy with Milano San Remo, which was a pretty, it was a pretty exciting race, to be honest. There was plenty of attacks and plenty of drama. Not quite the terrible weather that we'd like to associate with that bike race. It was quite warm and sunny. In fact, so warm and sunny that some undergrowth managed to catch light, mainly because of some numpties with a flare. But the racing itself was fairly interesting. The climbs seemed to be raced. The bits in between, not so much. And I think there was quite a, Sean Kelly would call it the waiting game. And there was a bit of the waiting game because Quickstep were the clear favourites. They had a big swathe of their riders in the leading group, and they were able to kind of guide their leaders. At that point, Zdeněk Stybar was in form, Phil Gill was in form. They'd got sprinters like Hodge in form. So they were clearly the team that everyone was looking towards and waiting to see what they could do. And we got to the Poggio, where again the speed, the pace was quite quick up there, and it didn't really lend itself to the sort of attacks that you know we'd like to see. A group did manage to force its way clear. Big hot race favourite Julian Alaphilippe was in that group. He's at that point he was on superb form. He'd won quite a lot of the races that he'd entered, like Challenge Mallorca, Strade Bianche, that kind of thing. He was really dominant. It was an Italian, though, who tried to sort of take the race on the descent, and it was Matteo Trentin. Wout van Aert was there, making his official Lotto Jumbo debut. And we had a crazy sort of situation where riders seemed to be happy to chase each other down, but no one was playing any sort of brinkmanship to try and force anyone else to bring an attack back. And that kind of left us in the position where, once Peter Sagan was in that group, we were pretty much destined for a sprint. And that's how it worked out. And it was a sprint that Alaphilippe managed to win. Lots of tears, floods of tears, lots of emotion. Nice to have a French winner and someone who at that point of the season, I don't know, it's only like a month or so ago, at that point of the season looked fairly unbeatable on any sort of terrain. So good start to the classic season with that. The mini classics, sort of semi-classics, came and went really. The Belgian ones were sort of an indicator of what was going to happen, but more an indicator for placings, because when the big one, the Tour of Flanders, came around, it seemed to be everyone versus Greg Van Avermaet. We'd had the Willy Wonty drama of whether Sepp van Marck would be starting for Education First because of an injury that he had. He did, and he rode a fantastic sort of domestique role, which sort of kept him and Alberto Bettiol in position quite close to the end of the race. And when we got onto the final sort of mini loop out of Oudenaarde, along the main road before cutting in to the hillside to take on the Quaremont and the Paterberg, we were in a position where it looked like, again, there could be a small group or the race wasn't necessarily breaking up. And that's something that had become a theme through the classics, really, that even though they were raced quite hard from quite a long way out, there were still relatively big groups of riders. So, again, with last year we saw you know, the races fragment a lot further from the line because of the smaller teams and teams getting used to having less riders per squad. This time, we saw that even though they were raced a bit further, teams seemed to have two and twos and threes available at the front, and that worked really, really well. And when Betiol went, the group behind kind of looked at Van Avermaet, who was one of the few riders without a core of other teammates around him. And as seems to be the way, the winning move now for Flanders goes on the Quaremont. Of course, you know, Phil Gilles slightly different to everyone else. He went a lap before Betiol certainly did. But Betiol was there. He was able to get over, get up that slightly challenging drag on the main road. And he was sort of out of sight and maybe not necessarily out of mind. But when you get in those twisty corners around towards the foot of the Paterberg, if you could get through there and get through that dead right turn and two-thirds of the way up the Paterberg before you start, you know, before they start to see you, the chasers, then you've got half a chance. And whilst he never really had a massive, massive gap, as with Sagan, as with Terpstra, as with Gilbert in previous editions of the race, he had enough. And, you know, the motivation, once he got off the descent through the Cancellara campsite where the camping caravans are, he had just about enough on the road into Oudenaarde to make it. And it is a long way up that finishing straight, but he was fine and it was great. And it was great to see Education First get a win, not just because our rider Cannondale, well, kind of partially because of that, but also because, you know, as a team that's really pushed its clean team agenda in the past, it's you know, you would hope that aside from Tom Danielson, that they won't get caught out for having that mindset and those feelings. So, you know, fair play to them. Good win. And it kind of put us in a position where maybe there was talk of the changing of the guard, maybe the Matthew van der Poel, Wout van Aert, the Betiol, the Alaphilippe sort of generation, Bob Jungels, maybe these riders were the ones that were going to come through, and maybe we'd seen the time of the Gilberts and maybe even to an extent Sagan and Van Avermaet, because both of them were not looking especially likely to pick up a win for different reasons, really. Sagan looked short of the form he's had the last couple of years, and was almost, you know, he was pushing, but not in the right position. And the writing was on the wall at Gent-Wevelgem when he managed to get dropped, but it was covered up as a mechanical. Who knows whether it was. As the classic season's unfolded, it's looked less and less likely that it was a mechanical. Because when the Hell of the North came the following Sunday and the peloton flew out of Paris up towards Roubaix, he was found wanting again, but we'll come on to that. Beforehand, the talk of the race the whole week had been of headwinds, stiff headwinds, and the potential for the bunch to be compacted and kept in, you know, in breakaways would not succeed or not be, you know, encouraged or not succeed. It actually didn't turn out to be like that. The early break took a while to go, but actually it kind of formed and reformed. There was a bit of excitement at the Arenberg Forest when Van Aert went down. He then managed to get back on and fall off again before getting back on again. He does seem to have had a lot of bad luck this classic season. He seems to be the guy who's having the mechanicals and the falls and all of the stuff that's happening at the wrong time, which is a shame for him because, you know, he's a good rider. And when you look at the fact that, you know, in things like Dwarsdorf, Vlaanderen, and on from that, there's a French semi-classic as well, but Matthew van der Poel then sort of took those and then carried the form through to Amstel. Van Aert probably took a step back this season compared to where he was at last year. Maybe Strada Bianchi aside, he was still a factor in that one. In the Hell of the North, however, he spent most of his time when he was on the TV screens chasing and trying to get back on, and he was successful in that, but it took a lot out of him. Even though he made the final break, he was also, like Sagan, not in a position to to tough it out. The rider who was toughing it out and who was going fantastically well was Philippe Gilbert, who, having almost been like a domestique for Milan and for Flanders and for some of the Belgian semi-classics, he was particularly up for this one, had lots and lots of power to burn, and was able to... He was pretty dominant in those final stages. He used Nils Pollitt of Katusha, who was in the break with him and made a breakthrough performance. He used him, he had Van Marker, he had Sagan, he had Van Aert, but he always seemed to be in the tactically in the right place and able to get more from them than they were getting from him. It was Pollitt who actually launched the winning move and went away. Philippe Gilbert chased him down. The others weren't really in the position. Van Marker, of course, had been short of miles because of his injury before Flanders, but it was a sensational ride from him. He also had gearing issues. There was a lot of riders who did. The story of Paris-Roubaix this year was more about people who had electric gears, who the cobbles were that bumpy and rough, it was sending their gears into a sort of protect crash mode. So maybe that's something that Shimano and the like will fix ahead of next year. But that kind of left Van Marck heartbroken. Sagan just completely ran out of energy. And Gilbert, to be honest, he was fairly competent in the sprint, and he was able to work Pollitt where he wanted him and then out-sprint him. And almost now, he's almost completed the set. Just Milan-San Remo left. It's difficult to say difficult to see an opportunity for him where he'll win it, because it'll have to come probably next year or the year after, based on his age. But I wouldn't have said he was one of the top favourites for this Roubaix. So you never know with Phil Gilles. He's whatever is out there, he's got it in his locker. He's a great rider and a great champion. What that did mean was that his Roubaix ride took quite a lot out of him. As we sort of worked our way towards the Amstel Gold Race, he looked slightly short. Now, the Amstel Gold Race had probably the most bizarre finish to a bicycle race you'd ever probably see. Up until that point, he'd won a couple of semi-classics, so he'd done all right. Matthew van der Poel, probably his classic season would have been defined by that awful attempt to bunny hop some street furniture with a pot plant in it that ended up with a double puncture and a crash that left him chasing back on the Quaremont, the lap before the finish, I believe. But he was a factor in Amstel Gold. He'd won the previous midweek, but Alaphilippe and Fuglsang, Jakob Fuglsang of Astana, had established what looked a fairly comfortable race winning lead. And they were over a minute ahead with not that many, 3-4 kilometres to go. Really, the chase was being driven by Sky and Mikhail Kwiatkowski at that point. He was making inroads, but didn't look he didn't look like he was going for anything other than the third place, really. But the breakaway started to mess about a bit. Van der Poel dragged a group of favourites back across to them, and they kind of made contact just as the sprint was starting out. So he not only dragged the group back, he then sort of led out the sprint to get across to Fuglsang and Alaphilippe, who were by this time messing about, trying to get the other ones on the front to lead out the sprint. And he had enough Van der Poel to come round them and win and be a Dutch winner in the Dutch national champion's jersey in the Dutch national classic race, the Amstel Gold Race. I mean, it was a sensational ride, and okay, this is not technically one of the five monuments, but it's one of the big early spring classics, so we'll include it in our monument review. He won, it looked like, with consummate ease. The helicopter shot put me in the mind of that Dan McClay sprint finish a few years back, when he kind of surfed the wheels and came from nowhere to get round everyone. McClay's wasn't quite as impressive as Van der Poel's, because he'd done a lot of the pulling and chasing to get the break pulled back. And it wasn't like a big peloton that he was, you know, working with to drag over. There was only five or six other riders in the group. So it was a fantastic, fantastic ride. And now puts him in the status of hot property. He's kind of won the Amstel and then declared that he's off to do some mountain biking and get ready for the cyclocross season. And we're now, he's kind of at a crossroads, and I think the sport's now at a crossroads with what to do with him. There's talk of Corendon Circus, his cyclocross team that have kind of done these road events since they, you know, sort of parachuted the team and him into the Arctic Race of Norway last August, where he won two stages. So now we're in a position where is a big team like Sky, Ineos, Quickstep going to go for him, or is he going to fulfil his ambitions and are Corendon Circus going to build a team around him? He's indicated that he's happy where he is with Corendon and that he's happy to stay on their books, and you know, we have to take him, I suppose, at his word for now, but it'll be interesting to see if that is a bargaining position, a marketing position from him and his dad, Adrie van der Poel, the former Classics winner, to see if they can talk up his value. But it'll be interesting. He just seems to want to ride any sort of bike in any sort of race, and it's fantastic to see. So he was a worthy winner of the Amstel Gold Race. Another non-monument, but it built up to the monuments, was Flèche Wallonne the last midweek. Probably the overriding image of that race will have been of Peter Sagan sailing out of the back a couple of climbs before the last ascent of the Mur de Huy to the finish. That was that for his Spring Classics campaign. We also found out around that time, this sort of time last week, that Van Avermaet was going to keep going all the way through to Liège to try and salvage something from his spring. And then we found ourselves in the position where during Liège-Bastogne-Liège, the final of the four spring monuments, of the five monuments overall, that Valverde wasn't going to last till more than 100k from the finish. There was talk of him being stung by a bee or something or other, although the rain was horizontal and sheeting down at that point. And maybe he didn't want to get the white rainbow jersey wet, but he was gone. TV pictures picked him up getting into a team car just before the live coverage of the race started with 100k to go. He went with 103.5k to go, something like that. And then we were in the position where it was probably the most low-key of the big classics early on, which is, I think, riders were feeling out the new finish, because previously it had finished on a hill above Liège in the suburb of Ons. There was quite a tough finish, and it was only like the last 300 metres really that wasn't on a climb. This time, after the Côte de Rochefoucauld, where Bob Jungels sort of just rode away from everyone last year to win, without actually having to attack, there was a flatter run into the finish in Liège. And it was on the climb that Jakob Fuglsang kind of bridged over to a group that was away. He was responding to an attack by Michael Woods. He went away. Woods wasn't able to stay with him, nor was David Formolo of Bora, although they were in a good position because they had Max Schachmann, probably one of the riders of the spring, behind in the second group. And Fuglsang just sort of rode away from them, really. The time gaps seemed to just jump up in sort of 15-20 second increments, but the group behind didn't ever really look like shutting him down. Formolo seemed happy to just try and hang on for second, and then the group from behind absorbed Woods near the finish, and whilst Alaphilippe struck out to try and salvage something with third place, he was in a group actually behind the group sprinting for third, which Schachmann took, and then it was the next group that Alaphilippe came in with, and he couldn't even win the sprint for that one. But on the Côte de Rochefoucauld, when the attack went by Woods and Fuglsang reacted, Alaphilippe looked laboured, looked tired, and was sort of out of the saddle, but not making that big an inroad into the lead. There you have it then. So who would we say was our man of the spring? We'd probably have to say Van der Poel, mainly for the manner of his Amstel win, but also backing that up with a couple of others. Of course, you know, thinking back to even pre-Flanders when he went down in the Nokere Corsa in the finishing sprint on the cobbles and it looked like his classic season was over. He managed to get up, ride Flanders, fall off in that, get up, get back on. You know, so he had it tough. But, you know, he was able to win the Grand Prix de Nantes as well as the Doise d'Or Vlaanderen. So, you know, he's won enough in the spring to indicate that, you know, he's probably the rider of the spring. I don't think there'd be any doubt about that, to be honest. Elsewhere, you'd probably be looking at Bettiol for his breakout performance by winning Flanders, taking his opportunity. It'll be interesting to see if he develops into a classics winner rather than, you know, someone who just had a fortunate break in an edition of the Tour of Flanders. Is he a Jackie Durand, you know, or is he a Tom Boonen? We'll have to wait and see. The biggest disappointments were Sagan and Van Avermaet. You feel for Greg Van Avermaet because everyone knows he's desperate to win Flanders, and, you know, pretty much everywhere he went in Flanders, the whole field seemed to just follow him and leave him in the wind and not give him any assistance. And his CCC team aren't yet in their first season at this level good enough to support him and give him any support up there, which kind of left him doing a lot more work than maybe he would ordinarily have done. So I feel sorry for GVA in that particular instance. It's been fascinating. Probably, you know, not a vintage classic season in terms of, you know, 10 out of 10 races, and, you know, I think you need maybe a stronger winner of Flanders for it to be classed as a big classic season. But then to finish this weekend, we have Britain's own Belgian Classic, which is local to me in Rutland. So if you look on our website, fendrineu.tumblr.com, you'll see a couple of videos from the race, a bit of action. We've got the descent out of the Barleythorpe sector of Unmade Farm Track, and then just over the top of the cold Overton on the first lap. So not hours and hours of footage, but little bits of video to give you a flavour of what the race was like. And it had quite a big and credible winner in the form of Rally UHC's Colin Joyce, who we've seen up there in big events and big races. So for him to come over and to win it is fantastic. And, you know, hopefully a sign of things to come, because this is a race that, you know, if it could get, you know, that massive sponsor or massive, you know, support, could go up a level. You know, standing at road junctions watching it and stuff, there were still frustrated people kicking off at the organisers about, you know, the fact the roads were shut. And I think it didn't help that it was a big blustery windy day, and the early breakaway that went was 6-7 minutes ahead, and then the peloton had split into three groups behind. So, you know, for a rolling roadblock that may usually have seen the road closed for sort of 10 minutes max for the peloton, the team cars and the broom wagon to get through, it was actually, you know, much, much longer, maybe even double that time that the roads were closed. But, you know, that's bike racing. It was one Sunday out of 52, so fingers crossed. So there we have it. We are going to look to be back with you. We're not going to leave it as long next time, hopefully, to get you to episode 120. We'll be discussing the Giro and seeing how either that, I'll either be previewing that or telling you how it's gone. We'll wait and see. Wait and see what sort of level of news there is for us to discuss. But in the meantime, there's not a lot else for me to say other than thank you very much for listening. If you could make sure that you either subscribe or share, or if you're in a position to tell people about the show, that would be fantastic. In the meantime, it doesn't leave me anything else to say other than take care and speak soon, and thank you for listening. This has been the Fendrinecast number 119.